Hey everyone, and welcome to 412 Kids. This is the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette's parenting podcast. My name is Abby Mackey. I am a Pittsburgh Post-Gazette health writer. I'm also a registered nurse with most of my experience in pediatrics. I have two kids of my own, and today we're going to be talking about parenting styles, which is a little bit of a controversial topic. This set of ideas might ruffle some feathers. It might cause some introspection. It certainly did in me. We're going to be talking about the difference between parents who allow risk-taking in their children, so calculated risk-taking, of course, versus those who are so-called helicopter parents. So are you the mom, dad, or caregiver who allows your kid to climb the tree, to experiment with the bug that happens to have pincers on it? Or are you the parent who constantly says, be careful, don't touch that? And in the middle, there's a way of being. At either extreme, there are ways of being. And interestingly, there is a lot of science that talks about what type of parenting might lend to a more capable and a less anxious child. Maybe someone that when they grow up, they're capable of solving more complicated problems with less stress, right? So we're going to address all of these ideas in this podcast with Dr. Jamie Hansen. He is a professor at the University of Pittsburgh, but also right now at post-gazette.com is the associated story that is live. It includes a child and adolescent psychiatrist from Allegheny Health Network, as well as someone who works with youth climbers, so rock climbers. And these are kids that aren't even always using ropes. So the idea that there are groups of parents who say, yes, I think this is a good thing for you, and here's why. So you're going to hear from all of those folks in that story. But right now, here's Dr. Hansen. All right. So I'm joined by Dr. Jamie Hansen. He's an assistant professor at the University of Pittsburgh in the Department of Psychology, and he researches children and adolescents in their environments, which sort of by default points to parenting, right?
Yeah.
So thanks so much for joining us to talk about helicopter parenting, or what we call helicopter parenting, versus allowing some risk taking. So first of all, what is helicopter parenting? When we use that term, what do we mean?
So it's really when parents are overly involved in their kids' lives and activities. There's a lot of constant supervision. There's making rules about everything. Basically, a parent is hovering over a kid at all moments. And there's this kind of strict supervision in different ways, really getting involved with all the different aspects of kids' lives, especially their social interactions. So parents really trying to control and manage different things, even if it's two kids just talking with each other or playing in different ways, a parent is kind of trying to insert themselves there.
And just so we can have some working definitions as we go through this, let's now talk about what we mean when we say risk-taking, because there's a lot of research in this area, right? And obviously, we're not saying that kids should be able to walk on the roof of the house. So these are more calculated risks. What kinds of things are we talking about?
So you just want to let kids be able to, in a lot of different domains of their lives, try to explore. So one thing that's important to stay at the front end is there's lots of different kinds of risks that kids can take. We often think about physical risks, so climbing a tree or kind of jumping across a big gap or something like that, playing in a creek or a small river. But there's also kind of social risks. And so there can be like kind of calculated risks that kids are taking, things that we're allowing them to explore the social environment, try and make a new friend on the playground. And then there's also the kind of digital world and online world. And so there's different kinds of places that kids are trying to explore. And some amount of just unstructured play, discovery is really kind of critical for kids' lives. They can really kind of, it can be very beneficial as they kind of figure out the rules of different environments, different social interactions, different spaces. And so that's what I think what we're talking about. We kind of have this kind of idea of at least calculated risk-taking in childhood.
Now, a lot of these risks, as you said, are physical ones, which sort of implies being outside. And that seems to be where some of the tension comes in, right? Because we now live in this society where we're fairly sedentary. our kids are sort of really into screens, sitting down, playing the video games, right? And there are books written on this. There's research out there. There's Last Child in the Woods. You know, this year, The Anxious Generation was released, talking about how screens have really changed our children in a number of ways. So what does the research say? What are the benefits of allowing our kids to get outside and explore in a way that parents aren't always allowing anymore?
So just having this unsupervised, unstructured play and exploration really leads kids to be more resilient, more self-reliant, kind of better able to assess and manage risks as they kind of grow up. So if you've already tried to explore and kind of tackle a new situation, and you've had to figure out the rules of a new game or a new interaction or being in a new environment, it allows you to just learn a little bit quicker the next time you might see something like that. And so kids who have these kinds of a little bit more exploration, have had a little bit more risk-taking, a little bit less helicopter parenting, tend to have lower rates of anxiety and depression. They also tend to have a little bit higher life satisfaction. It's not for all kids and adolescents and as they grow up into adults, but we see these kind of as big trends where parents still need to set boundaries and have limits, but kids being able to really kind of have their own agency and move around their environment, really take these risks, can be really beneficial from a lot of different perspectives for their mental health.
Do you think it informs some success that they may enjoy as adults too, right? Like if I can figure out how to make this fort out of almost nothing, can I figure out how to solve a big problem at work when I'm older?
The biggest thing that I often think about is how do we tackle failure? Failure is just a natural part of life. It doesn't matter if you're the most apt person and you have the best skills at something, you're going to fail. It's just going to be part of life. I have a PhD and there was so much failure involved with it. It was a big part of learning. And failure, you know, is often coupled with learning. You learn how to do things better. You learn how to do things more efficiently and effectively. You learn how to deal with your own emotions. And so just having to deal with that as kids grow up really helps them, I think, brace and build skills for when they have to have failure and new potential challenges in the future. And so there's a lot there that we can think about building these skills, having a little bit of failure that's not completely overwhelming. Maybe it's not the most high stakes thing in the world, really can help you then when you do have these more difficult and harder things as we grow up. So,
you know, as with anything, there are extremes. And one of the extremes when it comes to parenting styles and risk taking is referred to as free range parenting. Now, people use this all kinds of ways, right? Like sometimes people will say free range parenting and they just mean a parent that lets their kids, you know, jump into a creek or something like that. But more often than not, we're kind of talking about really allowing children of all ages to have agency, do a lot of what they want to do, right? So clinically, like from your perspective, if someone's talking about free range parenting, what do they mean?
So it's really just this incredible hands-off, like incredible high levels of freedom and independence that kids can pursue. So you can kind of just let kids kind of just go off and, you know, you could say, and we can think about kind of in previous, you know, decades, you know, go outside, you know, in the morning and come back before the streetlights are on. And you don't quite know anything about what kids are getting up into. And so free range parenting is this incredible hands-off space where a parent might not have any idea of what kids are doing, who they're hanging out with, and just the broad kind of, elements of those day-to-day things. And that's this place where we might be going too far, and we might actually have some kind of guidance and supervision and some ability to support kids, because they could be getting into things that are inappropriate for them, are scary, overwhelming. And so we don't want to go that extreme, because that might be a place where kids can get themselves into kind of safety risks, get into kind of maybe some legal jeopardy. And we don't want them to go so far to one direction, but you definitely have this massive hands-off style with these free-range parenting approaches.
Yeah. And, you know, of course, we're not trying to judge any way that anyone parents, but just objectively, as you said, this can verge on neglect. There can be legal ramifications depending on the activity and the child and all of those things, just to be blunt about that. Now, when it comes to more benign forms of parents that allow their children to take risks, you know, in my own experience, this is the way that I parent, full disclosure. And I sometimes feel like an alien. You know, if you are the parent that allows your child to jump over the creek rather than walking up to the nice little footbridge and walk over it, right? Or use a stick as a sword and they're in this imaginative play or whatever it is, you can get side-eyed looks, right? You can sort of be judged in those situations. So how did this helicopter parenting, this hypervigilance sort of become our default form of parenting?
I mean, I really think it's all about fear. We're all worried about others judging us, but I think we see these big high-profile news cases. Maybe a child is abducted and there's a big national news story, or our phone flashes with an Amber Alert, and there's some kind of great concerns about something. A lot of these events are actually pretty rare. I think a lot about child abduction and how horrible that is. Most times it's incredibly rare for that to be someone with trying to abduct a child and have a big free candy kind of van kind of thing. It's usually someone who the child knows, but we have these just, built in and preconceived and biased notions of, oh my God, my kid's going to get abducted. Oh my God, my kid's going to have, break their arm and fall. And so I think there's just all of this fear that kind of starts to permeate parenting nowadays. And you get judged for it. And I, like you, have been on a playground and my kid is climbing around and parents are looking at me kind of going, are you going to deal with them? Are you going to make sure they don't fall? And there's a point where, I kind of have to have a frank and sober conversation and say, I think she's able to, my 6-year-old is able to judge where she's at. And when I think she's gone a little too far, maybe I'll give her a note or two. But I think there's a lot of just fear and how we estimate risk. And we kind of worry that kids are going to get themselves into trouble and not be able to figure it out and get really hurt, or something really terrible is going to happen. But for the most part, kids often figure it out. They can take the kind of calculated risks. They're not trying, especially as they get a little bit older, they're not trying to actively hurt themselves. They know and they feel pain just like everybody else. But we get this kind of concern. And I think it also is a self-perpetuating cycle. The more that you protect your kid and your kid maybe doesn't get hurt, you then think you're doing the right thing. But one of the things I think we learned from elements of anxiety disorders is there's this notion of exposure. Just getting a little bit of dose of something that's scary can help us realize that the whole world's not going to collapse. And I think there's this challenge as a parent where we feel a lot of distress. We want to solve our kids' problems. We want to help and support them. And it feels good to do that. But there's a point where it may actually be compromising their long-term development. It might be great in the short term. We can resolve a dispute between two kids that are arguing. We can feel like we're really supporting our kids as they're maybe, doing something in the environment, or we're kind of making sure that they don't engage in a hazardous bit of play or behavior. But ultimately, kids have to be able to eventually become independent. And if we don't kind of start to engender these skills over time, they may just be less able to do it and less independent when they really need to. I think about when kids have different transitions in school and different life transitions. And there's a lot of times where they're just going to have to be independent and they're going to have to figure it out themselves. And so I think we have this fear, and it's also just maybe comforting as a parent to be able to reduce your kids' distress pretty quickly. But again, a little bit of distress is okay. That's part of life. And we're not going to be able to shield our kids in bubbles all of their life. And avoiding distress is not actually that psychologically healthy. There's going to be distressing things in life. And so we have to teach kids to deal with distress, deal with it in really productive ways, deal with it and help them talk through it, support them and know that people love and care for them. But trying to just avoid the distress and something that might be dangerous and slightly, fear-inducing is not going to ultimately be the best thing in the long term. So I think a lot of parents go, in the short term, this is great. And so you do it. And then you see other parents not doing it. And then you start to judge them. And I think that's really started to creep into lots of what's happening, where there's just this anxiety and this kind of, I think, wanting to reduce down how our kids are feeling, distressed and uncomfortable. But that uncomfortability is just part of life. So I think it's better to prepare them and support them when they go through uncomfortable things, rather than try to avoid all uncomfortable things and regress back into some other space. So,
As always, kids take their signals from us, right? From what we say, our body language, things like that. And one hot button topic so far as risk-taking and parenting is concerned, I've read articles on it, is how often we say, be careful, right? So that by saying, be careful, we're implying danger, right? So if we're going to allow our kids to sort of take the initiative and climb on the monkey bars without us standing right beneath them to catch their fall and all that stuff, right? If that's appropriate for their age and all of that. What kinds of things can we say or do to sort of check in with them without implying that something is dangerous or that something is wrong?
So I think there's a couple things. I think at the broadest level, I think our demeanor as parents and caregivers really set the tone. So being kind of calm and confident really is a good start. I know I've had to check myself as a parent when my kid might be doing something and I be careful, I'm worried about this. And I think it's a little bit better, you know, that kids aren't picking up on these signals because, you know, if you just come a little bit correct and with a calm confidence, I think that can kind of say, you know, this might be something that we want to pay attention to, but you can feel safe exploring and you don't have to be uneasy. And I think you're right that as we kind of say, be careful, be careful, be careful, that can be something that really kind of sets the tone and almost gets kids to do behaviors and engage in a way that we don't want. You know, I think every parent can figure out how to kind of convey this message that I think demeanor is the first piece of it. But sometimes we've just talked about, you know, just watch out. But then sometimes just asking kids, you think that's a good decision? Or how can we think about what you're doing here? It may have some consequences. And are you ready for those consequences? And again, I think about thinking about risk both from a physical space, but a social space, because I think that's a time when we may not be thinking as much. And there's a lot of people pushing to get kids out of the house and to go run around the neighborhood. But I think this is also really true of kind of social emotional spaces too. Can kids take risks, do a new activity or a new game, approach someone new on the playground? And I think, you know, we would never say, be careful, don't go talk to that new kid. I would, you know, it would be instead to say, you know, that's a really interesting decision. And you know, how was it afterwards, and try to unpack what they've done. But I think you can say, think about where you're at, you know, think about what's happening right here. Just be mindful of where you're going. And I know you've had some other guests that have talked a little bit about mindfulness, but do we think that's a good decision? And, you know, can we think about the pros and cons of what you're doing? And then I think you can also do kind of some post hoc after something happens. Okay, I saw you did this. Why, you know, what, let's talk about that. Let's unpack what's going on, because maybe that's a good thing. Maybe that's not a good thing.
Absolutely. You know, I think about situations. I have an older child who loves to climb everything and explore everything. And sometimes we have to talk about the actual texture of the rocks that he's trying to climb, right? If this is a rock that is flaking away, does that make sense or not? So we're kind of learning about a whole bunch of things at one time. And that's what I sort of love about this approach too. Now, we know where we are now. We know that more often than not, the parents who are sort of allowing the risk taking are the ones who stick out. Do you think that this is going to persist? Do you see any changes or trends in parenting to let people know where this might be going?
I really think that we're in a period of flux. I think we know that we've kind of overcorrected, and I think we're also dealing with the presence of screens and social media in so much of children and adolescents' lives. So I do think that we're in this space of change. People are mindful that sometimes overprotecting, helicoptering on kids is maybe not the most beneficial. So I think we're swinging back away from that a little bit. And I think people are still debating, as you kind of noted, like, it's not quite free range parenting. We want something maybe in the middle where we're not over kids all the time. But I think what's happening a lot of times is parents are starting to self-segregate a little bit in terms of the parents, and we might talk about this a little bit later, you know, parents that have similar values, caregivers that are kind of okay with little bits of risk, certain levels of risk that their kids and their friends might be taking. So I think that's a really interesting space. Mm-hmm. That's a big parenting trend. And then the other thing is just thinking about the kind of graded use of technology. So there's obviously been a lot of kind of pop culture and pop press books about the use of screens. And I think there's now kind of a big push for parents to think about this in this kind of graded fashion. So lots of people are saying, you know, I know parents personally that have been making pacts with other parents to say, in our social groups, in our community, we're not going to let kids get a phone until they're 14 or 15, or we're not going to let there be Instagram accounts until, you know, this age. And I think that's kind of a really emerging thing where there's a little bit more of a trickling back, I think, to a community model. I think one thing that I also think was useful related to a previous question was we've kind of become very solitary in the way we parent. You know, everyone is kind of their own little unit. And there used to be a little bit more of a communal kind of element to parenting. And you'd see someone else's parent on the street and you'd know that the community was around, that there were people kind of enforcing or believing in similar norms. And so you'd engage, even if your parent wasn't there, you'd probably engage in a more kind of appropriate way. And I think what's starting to happen is we're swinging back away from this kind of solitary parenting to a little bit more of parents thinking about, you know, communities and norms and what's happening there. So we're in this period of flux. Not every parent is really engaging in this way, but I think there's this movement away from helicoptering towards a little bit more freedom, and then trying to think about parenting and parenting groups, almost parenting pods that have kind of similar values. Because, you know, again, it's a big gray area of what level of risk is appropriate and what domains and what spaces. But so I think that's kind of becoming a very in vogue, number one. And then I think how we're dealing with technology, again, kind of connects to the parenting in pods form. But I think that's a big space where we're thinking a lot about when can kids use technology and social media, and it's everywhere. And so I think people are getting much more intentional about those choices and when it's happening in development.
So that's fascinating what you're talking about this sort of community parenting. I think that that's a natural consequence of just having children and parenting, right? You sort of end up congregating toward the people who are doing what you're doing, right? If your child is allowed to go to the pool with a friend, you're probably going to end up hanging around with other families who allow their kids to go to the pool with a friend, right? That makes sense.
Yes.
But what you're saying is it sounds like it's a little bit more intentional on the part of some parents, right? These are open and honest conversations.
Yeah. And I think I think a lot about this in relation to social media. So it becomes this really hard thing. And a lot of parents are struggling with it. Lots of parents of teenagers, because on some level, I'm thinking about distress and helping your kid, like, kind of, you know, not wanting your kid to be, you know, distressed or ostracized or isolated in some way. If you're the only 15-year-old who doesn't have a smartphone and you're not kind of connected, you're not on all the text message threads, you're not getting invited in a different way, you're not seeing interactions that are happening on Snapchat with the other kids in your grade, in your school, you feel like you're missing out. And then parents hear that and the kids say, you know, you're screwing with my life, mom. You're not letting me live. I'm not getting included because I don't have these, because I don't have technology, because I don't have a smartphone. And then parents are like, okay, I'll get you a phone. But then I think, you know, you have one person in the group, and then it kind of, you know, one teen in the group, and it then starts to spiral. But I think parents are trying to say, well, if we all as a kind of community decide, everyone that goes to the pool or everyone in this high school in this grade, we're not going to let the kids get phones. It makes a big difference, because then you don't have this kind of arguing of like, mom and dad, I'm being, you know, isolated because I don't have a phone. And so there is this kind of level of intentionality that I think people are starting to make. And obviously that intentionality kind of happens in different domains and spaces. But I think there's a little bit more just very explicit conversations that I've seen where I know parents that are like, what are you, like, having people sign pledges to really kind of say, you know, no phones until this age and no social media until this age, just because it's hard to kind of resist and to be patient and to push back on kids when they're really maybe giving what feels like a reasonable argument. And again, you don't want your kid to be upset too much. So you may feel like, oh, I'll just get them a phone. But then that can be the slow backsliding. So I think people are really kind of getting into this. And again, the risk taking and who's going to the pool and all these things and parenting as a maybe more of a collective or a community, I think just has taken on a different level and lens because of social media. But also I think because of this, you know, specific like risk-taking versus free-range parenting, or free-range parenting versus, you know, other styles of parenting, where again, some parents just really feel uncomfortable, and that gray area of how much risk is appropriate, sometimes it's just come out in very explicit ways where people talk about it in direct form. Like, I feel okay with my kid doing this. I'm okay with them being here. And I think that's a really kind of novel thing that's been popping up more and more.
Okay, so now for some real world advice, right? How we can actually put some of this into practice. Now, when we have younger children, you know, early elementary and younger, even if you're a parent who's going to allow risk taking, more often than not, you're going to be in the vicinity of that child, right? So that's kind of easy. But when we talk about maybe older elementary school age up through the teenage years, you know, I do have a lot of compassion for people who feel this anxiety where maybe it leads to helicopter parenting. We aren't exactly in the era anymore where you can say, get out of the house. I don't want to see you to the end of the day, right? There are more threats to kids now than there were, you know, in the middle 20th century, right? It's just different. So how can we allow kids to sort of have independence, go out and explore the world, and have ways to check in with them and keep them safe?
So it's definitely a complicated question. I think at the broadest level, it's just being intentional. And so I think trying to have explicit opportunities to kind of cultivate a little bit of risk-taking with a little bit of smart decision-making. I'll talk about younger kids in a sec, but I think we can, you know, have this intentionality and then have kind of graded privileges, where basically you could have, you know, you and your teen, for example, could really decide that, okay, I want to do X thing. I want to go to a concert downtown or at stage AE by myself. And I think you could come up with a plan that kind of starts to get you closer and closer to that. You know, I'm going to take the bus this way, and I'm going to take this longer bus ride. I'm going to go to an event by myself that's small. And, you know, I think you can, over time, if a teen can demonstrate responsibility and smart decision making in these spaces of risk, then I think as a parent, we can release and let them do more and more and more. And so it's kind of a little bit of intentionality with like graded privileges and graded abilities once, you know, teens show that they're, you know, able to kind of, you know, be responsible. And I think that it's almost like a graduated license when we think about driving. And so as we kind of can, you know, do this and be intentional, talk to kids and have kind of a breakdown. It takes a little bit of just kind of clear and precise communication with kids to say, okay, we're going to do this. And if you can kind of show that you can be responsible, do appropriate things, even though I'm not there, we'll give you more responsibility. And so I think that that's like kind of an easy space. With younger kids, it's actually funny. I have some friends who have a 5-year-old, and they like to kind of cultivate independence or responsibility in their kids. And you can do it actually really at any age. And I love these friends that they gave their kid a $20 bill, and they said, go buy yourself some ice cream down the street. And so there's a little bit of risk. They had to cross a big street. They had to kind of have an interaction with an adult. But then they were able to kind of check in with the kid. And that's something that my family has been doing too, where we say, okay, here's, you go, go out on your own, go to this store, we'll be nearby. But you do it, you figure out how to talk to other people when we're not around. And here's about how much change you should get and things like that, simple details. And you know, really recently we did this, and my 6-year-old loved it. And she said, they treated me like an adult. They talked to me like every other adult, and she was glowing and beaming. And I just think about how we can adapt and be intentional about what's happening, but with graded kind of letting go over time. And so, you know, I'm still trying to think about what's next for my 6-year-old, but I think with a teen, for example, we could have these different stages over time that would allow more and more independence. Maybe it's more and more time without checking in. Maybe it's more and more time and distance away, further, you know, different neighborhoods, different venues and places that kids might be going with different amounts of peers. And again, you can think about just like an intentional plan and then a frank conversation. If teens don't follow the kind of, you know, preordained plan, I think parents can say, you know, you came really close, or we talked about this and you did something a little bit different. And so we're still kind of at this same stage or level. And so we can't kind of, you can't go to the next space and go out with your friends, you know, to the South Side, until you show us that you're ready and that you can make kind of appropriate, you know, decisions, and you can, you know, bear this responsibility of being independent. And I think as many kids are pretty motivated by seeking that independence and having these new activities and kinds of things to explore. So a lot of kids, I think, will probably be excited to try to kind of hit the mark. And again, then I think parents and teens have to have these kinds of conversations afterwards to almost unpack post hoc. Okay, let's have a postmortem. What was it? What worked? What didn't? Did, you know, how did that work going off with your friends here? Was it tough in this way? And I think as long as you have kind of a real conversation with kids, you can kind of get some info that maybe you wouldn't have gotten before. You can see how they might be making decisions. And that level of kind of intentionality is kind of what parenting is all about. I think making these choices that will help kids, you know, navigate some new experiences, some new complexities, some new stressors can be really useful, and can allow them to eventually kind of gain new skills and be able to do things that they wouldn't otherwise be able to do if we didn't really have this like moment of just saying, we're going to try this and try to get you to a new space.
And when you talk about checking in, I mean, obviously that can be, you know, your child physically walking back to you from wherever they were. But this is also a spot, I think, where technology can be our friends, right? If this is an older child whom you've allowed to have a cell phone, it can be checking in that way. And then there are also devices on the market that a lot of parents are using. I'm one of them. I was a reluctant adopter, but now I like it. You know, the watches that are not, you know, like cell phones necessarily, but they allow you to call a number or two. That's another way too. Are you fans of those things?
I think those are great. And again, I think about, people have talked about dumb phones as another example. And again, it can be this gradation over time where you can kind of show, a teen can show their parent and their family that they can kind of use these things responsibly. Ultimately, kids are gonna be, you know, late adolescents, they're gonna be on social media. They're probably gonna have phones, but I think we wanna get them to build that usage and capacity over time. You don't want to just release them into the kind of wild in that regard. But if you can kind of over time say, okay, you can, number one, you don't lose your phone. You know, do the basics of keeping it safe and using it appropriately. And then you can kind of, you know, again, grade up. So I think, you know, different kinds of dumb phones or different kinds of watches that just allow kind of a few numbers to be dialed are great ways where, again, you create an avenue and a space for kids to actually demonstrate their responsibility and that they can be appropriate actors and make good decisions. So, you know, having a phone or a watch where you can call your parents at the preordained time gives kids an opportunity. I think we, again, want to be careful and thoughtful and intentional about, you know, again, don't, you know, a kid may say, oh, I can get a phone, so I can get a smartphone. And you might say, no, like, let's have a bigger conversation about that. Let's be a little bit slower in what's going on. You can maybe eventually get a smartphone. That may be a year or two from now, but I want to see that you can just like use this appropriately. And we need to use it for this purpose, which is just check it in. And I want to give you more responsibility and independence. And one way that you can get that is by checking in and just telling me you're okay, giving me an update about where you're at. And then, you know, asking if you can stay out a little bit longer or whatever. And those can be great opportunities to have that. I remember when I was a kid, obviously pre-phones, this is where I would get in kind of trouble with my own mom, where she'd say, oh, you didn't call me or something like that. And it was the days of payphones. And so it became a lot tougher to actually communicate with parents. But, you know, there's lots of good opportunities and options for things that can, again, create these like pathways to greater independence.
And, you know, we've used these buzz terms, helicopter parenting, free range parenting, but it's not always great to use these labels either, right? In one study that I read relative to risk taking, the researcher described it as safe as possible versus as safe as necessary. Do you think that's a helpful way to think about it?
I do. I mean, I really think about not every, you know, scraped knee or, you know, social rejection needs to be something that we're hyper-analyzing and hyperventilating about. Again, life is full of lots of difficulties, and we're not going to be able to protect kids from everything, especially as they grow up. Those kids will lead a sheltered life that will not be as rich and fulfilling. And so I think as this, like, you know, this intense safetyism kind of parenting has these can have these problems, and I understand why parents may engage in it. I remember when my kid was growing up and was a small toddler, I was hovering over them as they were going down the stairs when they were just learning to walk. But that's, you know, a time where we have to then eventually let go and let them be independent. And you can almost use that as a similar analogy. If I was to hover over my six-year-old the way I hovered over her at two when she was walking up and downstairs, her life would be pretty compromised. The kids in the playground would say, "What is your dad doing?" And it would really make her life quite different. And so I think similarly, not allowing kids to have any kind of risk is problematic. I think finding the exact, like, as safe as necessary kind of like threshold is hard and will vary a little bit between kids and parents. Some kids are, again, really good at like kind of stepping up to the plate in terms of responsibility and appropriate action. And some kids, it takes them a little bit longer. And so I think every parent will figure out every parent and kid will figure out what works for them. But I think we can't be as safe as possible. I don't think it actually promotes healthy development over time.
Dr. Hansen, thank you so much for joining us here on 412 Kids. You have the perfect set of expertise for this, and we appreciate you.
Well, thanks so much, and it was great chatting.
So thank you so much to Dr. Hansen for joining us here on the 412 Kids podcast. And also thank you to Dr. Gary Swanson from Allegheny Health Network and our friends over at Ascend Climbing for being a part of the written story. And there, we did talk about some topics within risk-taking and helicopter parenting that we didn't address here. So I hope you go and check out that story that's live now at post-gazette.com. Now, before you go, our final segment called 412 for You. These are some little ideas and nuggets that maybe wouldn't have come across you for any other reason. So first of all, it's summertime. We have more free time. There are also rainy days. So novelty is sometimes the name of the game. And so I thought I would bring your attention to something that is new from Sesame Workshop. So these are the folks who bring us Sesame Street. They recently launched a free series of videos to promote community connection, engagement, and exploration for children. This is with the support of the Public Service Enterprise Group Foundation. And it is available in two languages, English and Spanish. And we're talking about getting out in the community. You can watch some of your favorite characters clean up a community garden, build a birdhouse to welcome a new neighbor. And there are also principal resources as well, like little worksheets and things. So if you're interested in that, visit sesame.org/little neighbors. So the second item is something I try to do with my kids, which is sort of bring in current events into your conversations, let them know what the news is, and that even as kids, there are things in the news that can interest them. And this one is so fun. So a few days ago, the American Dairy Association and the Pennsylvania Dairy Promotion Program announced the results of their first ever honorary ice cream officer search. It's a real job, friends. So they pick two DC residents that will travel across the state of Pennsylvania sampling ice cream from local creameries associated with local dairies, and they're going to share this experience on social media. How great is that? So if you want to do that with your kids or just for yourself, follow Maddie Smith at On the Move with Mad or Mia Saversky at District Eats on social. And the final thing in 412 for you this time is just a thank you. This is our final episode in our first season of 412 Kids. And I want to thank every guest and every PG person that has contributed to this. You know, just like anything, there are about a million people in the background that make things like this possible, people that you might not hear their names otherwise. So I want you to hear their names. You've heard of Polly Higgins and Jacob Comer and Matt Rosenberg, and they are certainly the folks who have been doing the most work to make this look like it does and sound like it does every week. But also a huge thank you to Arturo Fernandez, Laura Schneiderman, Adam Bittner, Ryan Wynn, James Hilston, Kristen Mahamadi, Logan Robbins. All of these people have contributed along the way, even if it was just answering random questions. And even what this looks like as you're watching it, there are people who made that happen. So thanks so much for all of their help. And as always, from all of those people and me, it is our privilege to be on this journey with you and your 412 kids. Bye for now.